be so good when things are so bad? I think there are two basic reasons that explain how he did so well when so many are convinced they're doing badly. I think, first of all, some of the bad news is not quite as bad as it seems. And then I think there's some things going on which have been largely ignored in terms of the impact they have on the economy. First, the bad news. Federal deficit. Yes, it is too large, and you must make every effort to reduce it. But contrary to some positive impressions, it is not increasing, and it is not dangerously large. The best professional judgment now shows the federal deficit declining in the years ahead. Depending on whether you accept the administration's forecast or CBO's forecast, it's predicted to decline to a level of somewhere between $40 billion a year and $130 billion a year by 1993. And I know that's a wide range, but that's pretty good for your forecast. The important thing is it's declining. And as a percentage of GNP, the deficit is now expected to drop to what I would call manageable levels. We tend to forget something. The size of our economy is now approaching $5 trillion a year. By 1993, the projections show that the deficit will lie somewhere between 1 and 2% of GNP. And that's the deficit range we had during the administration of John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon. But perhaps the most important factors contributing to the unexpectedly good economy are the government's policies on taxes and regulation. Last year, the effective marginal tax rate dropped from 38% to 28%. Now, that's a whopping 26% decline. As far as I know, not many econometric models try to calculate the effect this tax rate cut would have on people's decisions to invest money, to save money, and to produce. But it obviously has had a significant impact. Maybe the most important reason why the economy continues to thunder along. Then, in addition to the government regulations that have changed, I think the most important factor on the regulatory front has been the improvement in general climate for business regulation. The prospects for new intrusive regulation of business have declined dramatically. In recent years, government regulation of business has stabilized, and people have little fear of new, unexpected regulation. So, I would say on the home front, there are three things that are declining that combined together have a major impact. One, declining tax rates. Two, declining deficits. And three, declining business regulation. And all three together have combined to provide a stimulus for an unexpectedly strong economy. But then there have been other factors. In fact, I think there are two other major factors that have contributed to our economic prosperity, dwarf the ones I've mentioned so far. They never get incorporated in economic forecasting models, and they are impossible to measure. First, there are revolutionary political changes taking place in many countries. Literally, a new wave of capitalism is sweeping across the face of the world. During the last 10 years, country after country has begun to move away from centrally planned economies towards free ones. Government controls have been swept away wholesale, tax rates lowered, trade barriers reduced, and government-owned businesses have been privatized. We have seen it happen in Canada and in England. It has happened in France, Australia, and New Zealand. And there have been truly revolutionary changes in communist China, as over 1 billion people have begun to move toward a freer economy. Perhaps most extraordinary of all is what is going on in the Soviet Union. In the Gorbachev's perestroika, which, by the way, every time I read about it in the press, it's defined as economic restructuring. But in Gorbachev and Salter, on page 50 of his book, defines it himself. And he says, you know, most people would look at this word interpreted literally as economic restructuring. But I do not mean it that way. I mean it in its full sense of revolution. The key elements of the communist economy have been thrown overboard and replaced with some of the building blocks of capitalism. Even countries such as Angola and Vietnam decentralizing and moving toward a greater degree of capitalism. In fact, so much is happening so fast in so many places, it's totally perfect. No one is systematically keeping track at all. But the closer you get to daily newspapers, television, magazines, tell a tremendous story. For example, just in small, about a month ago, Iraq started the stock market. The newspaper reports that the reason they started the stock market was that they started to privatize and sell things off, they started to shorten the capital. They started the stock market. Even Sweden, where most of my ancestors came from, holy mother of socialism. stunning reversal of ideology, adopted GLS to bring it on. Announcing tax reform that quote includes a reduction in personal income tax rates by as much as 50%. And then, one of my favorite stories, recently the Wall Street Journal carried a story that the Soviet Union had just issued a new coin. And the design of the coin celebrates Christianity, depicting Vladimir I, the man who introduced Christianity to Russia, holding a large cross. Now that's something that would have been unthinkable a few years ago. I think it's a symbol of the small but real revolutionary changes that are occurring in country after country. Basically, we are in the midst of a profound worldwide change in our political and economic institutions. The free world economy is good for the United States. Then there's one final factor that we'll see that may be, I think, the most important of all, and the effect that it's had on our current and future economic prosperity. And that is world peace. Peace is breaking out all over. When the historians 10, 15 years from now look back at the 8 years of the Reagan administration, I think they will conclude that Ronald Reagan's most important achievement was this. He turned the nuclear arms race around. Today, both the United States and the Soviet Union are busily engaged in bilateral nuclear disarmament. Under the terms of the INF Treaty, some 2,611 nuclear missiles are being destroyed. There are prospects that under the START negotiation, it is possible we might even destroy up to 50% of those months of nuclear missiles that threaten to annihilate us all. Soviet Union pulled the troops out of Afghanistan. Not talking about maybe beginning at all. Iran and Iraq have declared a ceasefire. And on and on. I think that what has happened is attributable to two things. First has been the powerful buildup in our national defenses, tremendous increase in military spending, which was largely made possible by the sound economic policies the government's been following for the last 8 to 9 years. And also, which I think will be looked at as another major achievement of the Reagan administration, the reintroduction of an old idea called defense and the beginning of SDI, building a protective missile system. By the way, I've got to mention one thing. Last night when I was listening to Enemy speak and some of the people talking about him, I want to tell you a secret about Enemy. Back in 1981-82, he was the fellow that pulled together and chaired a small committee inside the White House to set the stage for SDI. Modern experts had to meet with President Reagan. He never gets credit for being a nuclear weapon. And why is world peace so important to economic growth? I think because of what it does to how people view the future. As the prospects of war and possible nuclear annihilation fade, people's time horizons and the length and plan further out in the future. And their time discount rate drops. As we all know, that affects long-term interest rates. Anyway, the net result is that what is going on is going to be very good for the U.S. economy. So just summing up, I'd argue that there's some very strong, powerful reasons why the U.S. economy has been so strong. Why the stock market has surged up since 1982. And it is not a coincidence that both the record economic expansion and the tremendous upward move in the stock market that began that same year, 1982, just happened to be the same year that President Reagan's comprehensive economic policy was put in place and implemented. And during that same time that the general economic climate has been improving in the United States, it has also begun to improve all across the world, primarily because of the gradual, slow freeing up of an enclosed state of society. Now, in the last year or two, another vital element has been added, the sharply improving prospects for a greater degree of world peace. If that trend continues, and if the superpowers continue to pursue effective nuclear disarmament, the effect on the world economy can only be positive. So, there are three things, I think, that determine what the future economic prosperity of the United States is going to be. The first is sound economic policy. Keeping tax rates low. Cutting some existing taxes, such as the capital gains tax, even further. Controlling the federal deficit by controlling the growth of federal spending. And moving toward less, not more, government regulation of business. And Bush's election in 1988 assures a continuation and an advancement Reagan's economic policy. Second is the spread of capitalism around the world. The third is world peace. And I just want to say one final word. A lot of people have referred to this as the Reagan Revolution. It was not. Reagan was part of the revolution. He became its political leader, but he did not give it life. What we are seeing is the result of a political intellectual revolution that is sweeping not only across the United States, but across the entire globe. It was caused by not a handful of people or hundreds of people. It wasn't caused by millions of people either. It was caused by thousands of people. People who worked long and hard for at least the last 25, 30, 40 years. These are the people who wrote the books and the articles, who talked economic issues, politics, law, philosophy. Now, these are the people who published the magazines and the newspapers, worked with radio and television. These are the people who taught the universities, worked in the think tanks. These are the people who worked in the political campaigns, and a few actually ran for public office. These are the people who accepted political appointments, tried to make government work. Working alone, none of them could have made it happen. But together, it was the efforts of thousands of people that did make it happen. And today we are in the midst of a profound intellectual political revolution that is still developing. For 25 years, the Philadelphia Society, the men and women who comprise it, have been on the cutting edge of this movement. I think that's the real heritage of the Philadelphia Society. And the best is yet to come. As Ronald Reagan has often said, you ain't seen nothing yet.